Welcome to Genie Technology Land. I'm having all kinds of issues, so my hair is invisible tonight, but we're running with it anyway. We are so excited to be with you in this show. Jill and I are here to talk a little bit about some unconventional wisdom when it comes to leadership. And Jill, what I'd like to do is ask you, give me an example of somebody who uses some unconventional wisdom to his advantage in managing his leaders.
Well, this week I heard some amazing little snippets on LinkedIn from Gary Vee. And I think that would be a great place to start because he talks about leadership being about perspective. And it's so true, Jeannie. And so let's talk a little bit about those things that he said, because I think that they are really some subjects that make people think, because that's what we're about, is let's talk about looking at things a little differently and having conversations that count.
I think we're doing that right now, Jill. I think we're looking at things a little differently with my glowing hair and figuring out that we've got some technology challenges to resolve this weekend, but we make the show go on anyway.
Absolutely.
Okay. And so what is his perspective on vacation policy?
Well, you know, it was really interesting what he said, because he said, when you give people freedom, they show you who they are. And I think that's so true, because that's just happened over and over again in my life and in managing my teams. I've seen that go on. I'm not a person who wanted to babysit people, so I wanted to give them freedom. And you'll see the ones that you really cultivate and you really believe in, they really show you, they rise to that occasion. And the ones that aren't very disciplined and really don't want to put 100% into your organization, they self-select. And so it's really, it's a really interesting concept in leadership when you see that happen. And there's nothing that you even really need to do. You just need to give them that kind of freedom, and then they show you.
He says here, companies need to allow employees more breathing room and more opportunities to make themselves happy. Too many bosses and companies act in fear and try to box in many employees, and it's on the bosses to address that fear issue. It's on the onus of their responsibility. Where did fear come in the first place, and why?
I think that it's so much a part of many things, and even what he's saying about perspective. And it's just hard to concentrate. You are looking so great on that end, but it's so much a part of building a good leadership team is having belief in your people and creating the space where you give them the responsibility to show up at their best. And, you know, I've said this before, when you push them to the not push them, that's not a good word, but when your expectations of them are on the edge of their ability, then that is the place where they grow. That is the place where you give them the opportunity to push a little bit out of their comfort zone and really show up stronger and better than they have ever showed up for you before. So as a good leader, if you can cultivate that environment to continue to support their growth and then recognize and appreciate their growth, you know, statistics are when you do that, that's when you build a solid team and don't have any turnover and any of those kinds of viruses that really attack your organization.
You know, we've had the COVID virus going on for, gosh, almost a year now. but it's really not our biggest virus out there in corporate America or in the world. The bigger virus, and I've been a part of it on both ends, is a conspiracy of silence, where it's not feeling safe to speak up. And here's what I know. What I know in a culture is when it is absolutely safe for you and I to speak truth in, you know, respect, what ends up happening is we're not so busy operating in fear, covering our backside. Therefore, we're free to be creative and innovate.
Totally.
You can't spend your energy operating in fear and operating in creativity at the same time.
Exactly. Can't. Well, you know, they say there's just love or fear. So people ask me all the time, how do you cultivate your teams? Why do you not have any turnover in your organization? And I say, it's simple. It's all in one word. And it sounds kind of funny, but what do? I love them. And I honor who they are as individuals and develop their unique gifts. As if you are a conductor in an orchestra, and if everybody in your organizational team is a different and unique instrument, you know, your job then is to develop them and to, you are the director of the symphony.
How do you make sure you're meeting their needs and not yours?
You have to know what their needs are. So you need to spend time getting to know your people, to be present with them, to listen, to pay attention to who they are and have those conversations with them as far as what is their vision and what is your vision and how can we work together as a team to collectively make both of those things successful.
You know, I saw Gary say something once. It was very interesting. I've worked in different companies for 25, 30 years now. And I see that there are four quadrants of people in all of life, by the way, not just in work. We have quadrant one, low performers, low maintenance. Hey, they don't do much, but they don't ask for much. Quadrant two, low performers, high maintenance in life and personal and professional. They don't offer much, but boy, are they the whiners. High performers, low maintenance, and high performers, high maintenance. Obviously, what quadrant most people want is the high performers, low maintenance, because they're producing with little results. But I've also seen a lot of excuses made for high performers that are high maintenance. Oh, well, you know, I know that they're difficult to work with, but they produce a lot of numbers. I know that they're difficult to, and they treat people poorly, but. And so we make a lot of excuses. And then I think sometimes we're quick to make those excuses to get today's pennies by sabotaging ourselves for tomorrow's dollars. Because if somebody's toxic and high maintenance, I consider to be very high maintenance, to be consistently toxic, why do we want somebody just because they can produce? The impact that they're going to have on the culture outside of finances, my question to you is that worth it?
Absolutely not. You know, they say, and I've had that in my organization, which, you know, we've had to eliminate those people that were destructive to the culture, because that is the foundation of your organization and that is your future. And you know how they say you're only as strong as your weakest link. And so if you've got that breakdown, you've got to strengthen in that area. You've got to get rid of that weak link, even if it is a link that produces.
You know, I can remember. By the way, speaking of toxicity, is my picture better to look at?
It's better. Success.
We were having some trouble there, but it didn't keep us from moving on. So I can remember once upon a time, about 100 years ago in my career, it was a long, long time ago, I had the opportunity to work with three departments that were, I was overseeing, and I was the new kid on the block, their new boss. And our first meeting I walked into and I was like, holy moly. I felt like I was in a barroom brawl at closing time. I mean, me, the new boss, I'm getting ready to tell them the initiatives from the CEO, and they're all sitting there. And as I'm telling them, then one of them says to my assistant taking notes, "Hey, why don't you give him this message for me?" And holds up her middle finger. Then another one said, as one of her colleagues walked in the door in front of me, she had saved her a seat and she didn't sit there. She sat on the other side of the table. She goes, "Okay, don't sit next to me, you effing bitch." And I'm thinking, Mom didn't tell me how to handle this one. Here I am, the new boss, the disrespect is flying. It's they're testing me very clearly. And so I actually semi-failed the test. I was in so much shock because this was a professional setting that I couldn't believe what I was seeing that I didn't respond right there like I would today in the moment. I waited. I went back to my office, closed the door, breathed a sigh, and said, "Gosh, why can't I be a Walmart greeter?" And then I realized, Jeannie, you didn't take the first chance to address it, but you better take the second or you're going to lose everybody's respect. So I called the challenging ones in, the high maintenance, difficult ones in, and had a fireside chat with them one-on-one. Said, "Hey, you're a high performer, or you're an informal power player here. And this is what I noticed you did in your first meeting with me as your new boss. Help me to understand what part of that you thought was acceptable. I'm curious. I'm just curious about your thought process on this." One of them danced around every excuse humanly possible and found a new job. The other one fell apart and cried and apologized and ended up becoming one of my best performers. And I thought to myself, wow, that's where I think we sometimes go wrong is, when you go wrong though, you can course correct and make it right. And I did that after I got over the initial shock, but I had to set the boundary very early on. You weren't gonna be a troublemaker and you weren't gonna be a high maintenance, difficult person to work with, or you were going to be in my office. We were going to nip that in the bud. And I did end up earning their respect, but boy, I got some battle scars to prove it. And I have seen some people in my career keep individuals like that on their team. And guess what I believe? You talked about it at the beginning. I believe that's operating out of fear.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I also believe it costs you dollars later.
It permeates into every part of your business when you allow those things. And I would also really like to point out, I love what you said about you didn't articulate, but it's the boundaries that you set. And you set those expectations. And one of the things I tell my people is this is going to be the best leadership experience that you've ever had, but it's a two-way street. You know, I'm going to honor you and we're going to develop together as best as possible, but you need to honor the boundaries and the expectations within this organization as well. And then together, we are going to build something that's going to serve us both. And that's when you really develop the connection. And that's what you said about the person that the second person that you came in and talked to that ended up being one of your highest performers and one of your closest friends. Because once you get past that fear, that's when you get into the real human being. And that's where you connect. And that's where you make your progress in your business. Because only when you are operating in truth, without the mask and beyond the mask, that you can really get power, innovation, creativity, and financial success. It really shows up in your profit.
You have a leader on the team. The leader on the team, every time you bring something up to her or him, he says, "That's not my fault. That's them. That's their issue. They need to learn to adjust to what I'm doing." You have a leader on the team, and leader on the team, he says, "You know, that's not true. I didn't do this." You have a leader on the team, and he always has to be the one in the room who's the most right and the smartest. What's your assessment? This is all the same person, by the way.
Wow, all the same person. I would have to think about that. What did you do in that situation?
I recognized that this was an individual, though they came across very strong. He was actually quite fearful. And he had the need to put on a mask of perfection and his need to be right. We have two choices. Let me just tell you, you can't do both at the same time. You can either restore the relationship or you can be right, but you can't have both at the same time. And so his need to be right cost him the capacity to connect with a lot of people. It was so painfully obvious. It broke my heart. He was struggling with people leaving because people don't leave companies. They leave leaders. He was struggling with putting on the mask of perfection, which is the biggest lie out there. Here's the thing. I believe mistakes are good for you, which is why I'm comfortable talking about my own. I've learned, let me tell you something, people. Failure is highly underrated. It is the best teacher out there. It teaches you what not to do and build stepping stones to success. This myth that I have to get up in front of everybody and look like I'm always perfect. I'm not talking about having all your junk hanging out and all your personal business. No, that's not appropriate. I'm talking about the recognition that you can stand in the power of the greatness you are while at the same time embracing your flaws and bringing alongside people who have those strengths and be okay being fully seen. Perfection, Brene Brown said it is a 20-ton shield that we carry around thinking it's going to protect us when in fact all it does is really keep us from being seen.
It does. You know what I always say about that? There is no connection in perfection.
That's beautiful. That's easy to remember.
It is easy to remember. And that's the answer to your question, is that when the individual behaved like he did, you had to get beyond that shield. You had to get beyond the mask. You had to connect with him as an individual to be able to implement change, because in that facade, that piece will never change. The confidence is built behind the mask. And so that's the place where you engaged with him and be able to create the shift.
Sometimes you can create it. Here's the thing it requires, though. I did a speaking engagement on emotional intelligence a few months ago, and we had a powerful Q&A afterwards. And one of the ladies raised her hand and she goes, "You know, Jeannie, I've seen you talk on a couple of these things. Why is it that sometimes the people who most need it aren't present? Is this really something that can be learned?" And my answer back to her was, actually, yes, it can. But the key ingredient is a teachable spirit. The key ingredient is opening up with humility and being present to learn, not coming in saying, "I know it all."
Well, "I know it all" is another one of those masks.
And it's a vibe you can pick up on. The handshake of the host affects the taste of the roast. And have you ever heard of Robert Rosenthal?
Yes.
Okay. He did an experiment many, many years ago as a psychologist. He came over from, he was actually in a Jewish concentration camp, I believe. And he came over in the 60s and 70s. He did an experiment. It's called The Pygmalion in the Classroom. And anybody who's watched musicals has seen My Fair Lady, saw how they took a street urchin, brought her in and made her this beautiful lady of society. That movie's based on his premise. And it's called The Pygmalion Effect. And what they did is they had some students in a district in the inner city that were sucking. I mean, their scores, their academic scores were in the toilet. They were in big trouble. So they did an experiment on these teachers. They brought a couple of them in the room and they said, "Hey, next year, and when the school year starts, you are the top 20% of the teachers in this district. You are going to get the top 20% of the students. However, you can't tell them they're the top 20%. So they all go home for the summer. They come back a couple days before the students. They have a meeting. The principal reminds them, hey, remember, you're the top 20%. You're getting the top 20% of students, but you're not allowed to tell them they're the top 20% of students. And they did this experiment on the school district. And at the end of the year, that group, their test scores were 35% higher. And guess what? they weren't the top 20% of the students, and they weren't the top 20% of the teachers. All they did was change their perception. The way the teachers taught the students changed the way they interacted with them. They picked up on it, and boom, look what we got.
Well, and that is, I love that story. And that goes back to what I'm saying about belief. When you engage with someone at the, like I said, at the edge of their ability, when you trust them and you believe in their capacity, you have to get behind the mask. So that kind of growth does not happen mask to mask. It only happens, like I say, soul to soul. But when you can connect with someone and you believe in them and you can put them in a situation just like those kids, somebody told them that they treated them as if they were extraordinary and they rose to the occasion. If they treat them like they're broken, guess what? They show up broken. I see it happen all the time in other companies around me. They treat their employees like they're not capable. They're not proud of them. They're not developing them. I tell everybody, I have the greatest people on the face of the earth. And so we have that. And so that expectation is what they live up to. But then I also have to show up that way for them. You know, it's a two-way street.
And I think it might even be time for a commercial.
All right. So we will take a little commercial and we will be right back.
Are you sick and tired of being tired? Are you tired of your clothes not fitting the way you want them to? Are you frustrated when you look at that number on the scale? Seeing the number on the scale can be frustrating. Imagine a whole new generation of products that focus on what really counts, body composition. We have introduced an innovative trio of products that focus on fat loss and body composition, more muscle, less fat. This is the first in the world combination to reduce fat loss. It accelerates fat reduction, reduces fat cell size, reduces fat cell formation, improves muscle tone, boosts metabolism, burns more calories, and promotes lean body composition. This lean body system is the game changer you've been looking for. Go to trimwithus.com for $10 off on your first order today.
Awesome. We are back in action. Jill will be right back with us. So I want to talk a minute, though, about remembering that progress and challenges masquerade oftentimes as failure. And putting on a mask to try to pretend you're perfect or hide the mistake doesn't get us anywhere. It doesn't get us anywhere with people. It doesn't get us anywhere in moving forward in our business. And it doesn't get us anywhere in being seen or being known. Here's the point I got to make. I have had a long history in my career as an executive in healthcare, in end-of-life care and hospice. I've spent over half of my career in it. And this I can tell you, having been at the bedside of over 100 people who were dying, at two of them in my own family, they're all different. But guess what? There are some similarities, and it's coming out in a book next year called Sacred Secrets, The Keys to Living, Seven Non-Negotiables That Dying Taught Me About Living. But one of them is this. Not one of them at the end said to me, gosh, Jeannie, I sure wish I'd played it safer. Now, they didn't say for me to take risks for at risk's sake. They said to take them calculated, but stop worrying about playing life safe. And stop worrying about what other people think. And stop worrying about pleasing people. Because sometimes your heart's going to call you to soar in a direction that those you love and love you might not even always understand. And that's okay. You got to decide in those moments, am I going to continue to play it safe and just go with the flow because that's what everybody wants of me? Or am I going to listen to the call on my heart and maybe challenge a few people in their thinking?
Absolutely.
That's a master at playing it safe in my past. But I can't do it anymore and be authentic to the lessons I learned from these people who were gracious enough to allow me in that sacred time in their lives at the end of it. I can't be authentic and true to that by continuing to play safe. But that means confronting, dying to being concerned what other people think.
Absolutely. Because
you know, Renee said it, Jill. Didn't she say it about, it's not that you don't care what other people think. It's just that you put what they think in a category. And the ones who have the most input to your life are the ones that are in the trenches there with you doing the thing. If they're not doing the thing, then they might need to be in the nosebleeds.
Yeah. If they're not out on the field, they don't get they don't get to vote. You know, if they're not there with you, supporting you, then, you know, doing their best. And I think that's something that's happening now, too, I think, with this coronavirus, is that it's the whole pandemic and the whole shutting down of all of these things has really caused us to decide what's really important to us. You know, what really counts? That's what brought us together to do this show, is to talk about things that really count to people, that really matter, that maybe nobody's talking about, and to give you opportunity to explore those ideas and to learn about those areas of yourself that maybe you were afraid to express before.
I, you know, it's funny, we wouldn't have met at all if it weren't for the coronavirus. We would have never been in the same group at the same time with Forbes doing our thing and then having this branch out as a result. But for me, what the coronavirus has taught me is stop the bullshit. I mean, really, the things that are the most important aren't that complex, and there really aren't that many. I told you the other night, I was challenging myself with my work schedule and then my personal endeavors. And I'm like, you know, and it has to bring me joy. I'm done killing myself to kill myself because that next thing over the horizon. No, I'm pacing steady, very calculated, respecting my time and only giving it the things that have the potential to produce joy.
Absolutely. My word this year is life-giving. And I want to, what I'm doing is in everything I'm doing, I'm figuring out what are the pieces that are life-giving. And not everything, you know, there's mundane things, but if you build up momentum of the things that are life-giving to you and are giving you the energy and getting you out of bed in the morning because you're so passionate, then you can accomplish throughout the day the things that don't give you so much life. But you've got to balance having those things have got to be the most important thing. And that's how you have to structure your day. And that's been a new thing for me, and really deciding, how am I going to live the rest of my life? And how am I going to maximize my impact?
Yeah, I think if I don't have that, what you talked about, what ends up happening for me is the alarm goes off, I hit snooze. The alarm goes off, I hit snooze again, because guess what? Without passion, my get up and go got up and went. I put one foot out of the bed and the other one goes, uh-uh, I'm not coming today. Sorry, not joining you. And so that's a pretty good sign to me. It's time to stop what I'm doing, take a breather and reevaluate. You know, not every day is rainbows and sunshine. I'm not talking about that unrealistic thing. Unicorns, rainbows and sunshine everywhere. Some days are full of crap, but I'm okay with crap when crap is leading me toward a bigger destination that has life-giving passion around it. And at my point, you know, I hit past the 50 mark now. At my point in life, what matters to me has radically changed. And it's about making a difference with the rest of my life and making it the best of my life.
Absolutely. And if you really think about it, everybody wants to go towards something that they call perfection. Well, what happens if you actually achieve that? What does perfection look like? What does perfection feel like? My personal feeling about it is that that's pretty boring. Because after you have a life of ease and perfection for a couple of days, there's no life. There's no, it is, interest in creating something. So when you have things that go quote unquote wrong, it's just an opportunity to grow in another level. I tell Jonathan all the time, if we had perfect people, you would be an average manager. The fact that we have difficult situations sometimes, that's what makes you grow. That's what makes you the most extraordinary manager in this airport, because you have dealt with these things in a positive way and you have grown through this experience. And a lot of people, when they're talking about what you were talking about earlier, in playing it safe, is not allowing yourself to grow. And that becomes like a cesspool. And I think that's when people get really depressed and all those, because the energy of creating is what is life-giving. And connecting with other people like you and looking for good people around you, so that you really have a support system that's going to call you out. I had a great experience with a friend of mine this week that really, I was really frustrated and overwhelmed by so many things I've going on. And she was like, wait a minute, sister, you have one thing to do. And that's your most important thing. That's the first thing on your list. And that is all you are going to focus on. And you know, that shift in perspective for me has, I achieved it immediately. I got it done. I checked it off the list. I didn't get stuck in that overwhelm. So that's part of the power of having a good group of power partners and a good team and good people around you to support that thought process.
My word is simplicity. And it was my word last year too. I've decided we're not done with it, because I'm going to tell you what I've seen in and out of corporate America. It's easier to keep things difficult. It takes much more work and effort initially to go for simplicity. But once you get it down, but getting there is the hard part. And I think of Price Pritchett told a story one time about this that really drove it home for me. And he was at an inn in Canada and he was sitting there reading the paper, drinking his coffee, right by the windows, you know, at the table. And he saw this fly and it kept going against the window pane. Okay. And it kept going, he wanted to get outside really, really bad, but it kept going against the window pane and it just kept trying harder and harder. It's like he wasn't getting where it needed to go. So he thought, make it harder and harder and harder. And eventually he looked at it and he said, how sad. Because within about, you know, 15 or 20 minutes, that fly, and it probably been going on long before he got there, died at the windowsill. Yet 10 feet away was an open door. And so if he had just stopped trying, and I'm going to say this to those of us out there, to you and me and people listening, sometimes when you're trying to have a breakthrough, consider trying easier, relax, take a breath and take the pressure off and try a new twist. Because oftentimes the solution can be as simple as flying 10 feet to freedom. But you're so busy caught in the tyranny of trying to do harder, harder, harder. Harder's not always better, but sometimes simple is. And the only way you're going to get to simple is break the pattern. You have to do a pattern interrupt.
Absolutely. That's what happened for me. You know, when you get in that thought process where you're just really thinking, oh, I've got so much to do and I'm overwhelmed, you need that pattern interrupt. You need to stop and say, wait a minute. Let's take a look. Let's shift. Let's look for the open door. Like you said, let's look for the ease. One of the guys that I was in this amazing book with me is Terry Clark. And we are going to have him on the show to talk about flow state, because that's such a powerful place to create from. And that flow state is not in stress and difficulty. The flow state is in ease, exactly like you said.
If there were a way for people and for us to be able to expand our creativity next level to produce results, what level of interest do you think that would be?
I would hope that would be like, that's where we're headed. That's where we want to go. Is to that next level of creating with flow and ease and alignment and power, and also with the intention of making an impact. Because, you know, I'm also after 50. And in the beginning of my career, it was about, you know, creating success for me. You know, I wanted to build a business, become successful. And now the transition is, how can I help others to be successful?
And I think one of the ways is through helping them tap into their creativity. Some people say, well, I'm not creative. Yeah, you are. You are creative in the area of your expertise. You just haven't learned how to tap into that. And the reason I'm honing on this is because around St. Patrick's Day, or maybe even a little before, we're going to be launching a course on creativity. And I can't wait to see people get to take advantage of that and see what happens for them as they tap into, wow, I never knew I had this, because it happened for me when I walked through the program, and I can't not share that information. So you and I are going to have that for them. And then I want the people who tell me they don't think they're all that creative to come back and say, now, what do you think?
Exactly. Watching someone discover something about themselves that they didn't see before. So you just being a reflector of their genius back to them and allowing themselves to see themselves in a different light and recognize how much creativity they have, how much potential they have, all the possibilities. I think that for me, that's the greatest joy in life, to see people really embrace their own passion, their own power, their own possibility, and to start to operate that and bring that into the world. And for me, I want to see the people bring that into culture in every workplace. If you're going to spend all of the hours of the day there, then let's do something powerful for each other, for the company, and for the planet in general. Because this up-levels the energy for everyone that touches you. It's like a ripple effect.
Yeah, and I will tell you this. In that, we're going to learn a little bit about how the creative power of your I am works. And we're going to learn that, hey, you might be saying, if my circumstances were different, I could. If my finances were different, I could. If my boss was better to work for, I could. I'm here to tell you that if you're willing to take the challenge, we're going to show you how to move beyond the circumstances and still get those results. It can be done. It is not about what's externally around you as much as what is within you. And we can show you how to tap into that. And I'm looking forward to that opportunity. This has been a really vibrant discussion on everything from Gary Vee to vulnerability, to putting off the mask of perfection, to showing up and tapping into your creativity. We've gone a quick journey in 40 minutes today, Jill. Do you have any final thoughts you want to share with people?
Give that gift to someone this week.
What gift?
Give that gift of honoring their creativity, of connecting with them beyond the mask, of paying attention, being present, and seeing the potential within someone this week. I gave a talk today about relationship capital, about building relationship capital. And we talked about doing 5 things every day to nurture yourself and also to nurture the relationships around you. So that's what I would say in closing is, give that gift, nurture yourself, and do 5 things every day that can nurture the people around you and start to build those powerful relationships and those connections, because that's going to make your life rich with possibilities.
And I'll finish up with saying, hey, at the end of the day, keep it simple. No extra pressure, no perfection. No 20-ton criteria of what you have to do. Keep it simple and just act on it. Absolutely. So thank you so much for taking time to spend with us today. I wish you a bountiful week of conversations that count around the corner everywhere you go. Cheers.
Absolutely. Have a great week, everyone.